I'm Halcyon from Pink Art Camp and the PlayaPrinciples.com Tips and Tricks for Burning Man videos. We're going to be joined here any minute by Mitchell Gomez, who's going to be joining and talking to us with his perspectives from Dance Safe and all over the world. Welcome everyone who is here live. We are going to be archiving this for posterity and for posteriors. And we're going to be touching on the tips and tricks realms of harm reduction. We've had a few conversations, you and I, Mitchell, in person and online about different areas that we could touch on. We do not have a agenda. We're going to freeform this. First of all, can I just say, can you give us a little background on why you are qualified to speak about said topic?
Yeah, so other than just by virtue of my title of being executive director of DanceSafe, the reason I sort of ended up in this position is that this is a subject I've just been really emotionally invested in and involved in for a long, long time. I went to New College of Florida. It's a small liberal arts school in Florida. It's where MAPS started. It's where Irowid was really sort of, the formative period of Irowid was really there as well. So a school with a long history of sort of psychedelic culture and involvement in that world. And it was actually the only school that I applied to for my undergraduate. I knew I wanted to be involved in this world so much that I didn't even apply to a backup school. So thankfully I got in. I'm not really sure what my life would look like if I hadn't. But yeah, it's a subject that I've been sort of really, long before I ever personally tried psychedelics, it's a subject I was intellectually interested in.
Interesting.
And my original sort of degree plan was actually to try to craft a degree around psychedelic neuropharmacology. I did a year of organic chemistry and decided I wasn't going to do that. But yeah, I just have a long sort of background in that. I've been all over the media the last 5 years talking about harm reduction and health education, consulted with the Canadian government on how to reduce festival deaths. They listened to some of my advice and did not listen to some of my other advice, but that's okay. I'm always going to push boundaries. I really do believe that the ultimate step in harm reduction is to end the drug war and to provide legal, regulated access to all drugs. And when you tell that to a representative of the Canadian government or the U.S. government, the conversation tends to get a little stagnant. But I'm never going to stop pushing that line, because really 90% of what DanceSafe does is drug prohibition harm reduction, right? It's not dealing with harms that are created sort of intrinsically by the molecules. It's harms that are really created by black markets, by misrepresentation, and misrepresentation doesn't happen in regulated markets. And so I'm right. Always going to push that line. And it does, in some ways, I think people hear that and it makes it difficult for them to accept that. You know, people, as soon as you say that, people immediately jump to one of two drugs. Non-drug users always jump to, but what about cocaine? Drug users always jump to, but what about heroin? You can always tell a lot about a person by which drug is where their line in the sand is. But to me, the more dangerous a drug is, the more reason we should have for providing legal regulated access. Because drugs are always made more dangerous by making them illegal. And drugs like heroin and cocaine are too intrinsically dangerous to let black markets control them. You know, drugs like pot, it's not ideal that they're illegal, because no drug should be illegal. But the drug is so intrinsically safe that the black market isn't going to make it much more dangerous, right? And so that's sort of where my line tends to be with dealing with governments. But that, yeah, we got off topic on why I'm qualified to do this. But I'm the friendliest drug nerd you're ever going to meet.
So to take a step back on, I'm familiar with DanceSafe because of testing. Is that, can you sure. talk about what they do with that?
Yeah, so let me talk about DanceSafe from a sort of higher context first, and then the testing okay. in particular, because that really is a small part of what we do. So we're a general okay. health education nonprofit, and we focus on substance use, sexual health, hearing protection. We give out lots of sunscreen. So really any of the dangers that you might run into at a festival are the things that we're really trying to address. And
you're
focusing
like
more
mom
on
and dad.
We're rave moms.
Like
we're
rave
professional
mom
rave moms, professional rave dads.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And we're focusing a lot on sexual health right now, on affirmative consent. Working the DanSafe booth, it's an unfortunately common thing for somebody to come to the booth and have had a experience that they felt like crossed their lines of consent, or they were sexually assaulted. And so we're really trying to push sort of consent culture under the hashtag We Love Consent. If you want to search that hashtag, you can find the program that Kristen has been sort of spearheading on this. But the thing that really we're really well known for, the thing that's sort of the hook for getting people interested in coming to the booth, is when we do on-site reagent drug testing. So we'll set up at events. People will bring us their pills, their powders, their blotter, whatever it is they're planning on consuming, and we'll chemically analyze that substance to determine the primary composition of what is in that sample. So these test kits don't detect cutting agents or purity. We can't say, oh, this is 99% MDMA. But what we can tell somebody is this is definitely not MDMA, right? Which is useful information to have. If the pill you thought was MDMA is definitely not MDMA, that's something you should know before you decide to consume that substance. We
Right.
are working on fundraising towards buying a device called the Bruker Alpha. It's a Fourier transformer infrared spectroscopy drug analysis lab. It's designed for border patrol, law enforcement, roughly 50,000 with all the databases and little add-ons we need. And that will allow us to do some more sort of specific drug analysis in a way that you can't do with the technology we currently use. But for right now, the reagent testing is certainly better than not reagent testing. It's always good to have some idea of what it is that you're consuming. It's always good to know it's definitely not the thing you thought it was. But this does bring us back to that point I made of this is not necessarily drug harm reduction. This really is drug prohibition harm reduction. It's dealing with the
Right.
effects of black markets and prohibition. Because intrinsically, these molecules are just molecules, and there's no reason for somebody to sell something like N-ethylpentylone as MDMA other than the fact that they can't get MDMA, and so they're selling something they can get as something they
Right.
can't, or something that's cheaper, or something that's easier to acquire. But yeah, the drug checking is a major hook. It's not something we do at every event we're at. If a promoter or local law enforcement is not comfortable with that service, we would rather be there giving out information, giving out water, giving out condoms, giving out earplugs, than not be on site at all. And so we're willing to negotiate on that service. We don't always do this. But it's surprising how often even local law enforcement is really supportive of drug checking services. They understand the issue, they recognize what a problem it is, and that we can help mitigate that problem. And the other nice thing about doing
And
on-site drug checking, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But the last point about drug
no, keep
checking,
going.
it allows you to do education in a way that's really, really targeted and really useful. Because even if a sample is what the person thought it was, even if their pill is MDMA, these people still should be told, look, taking MDMA in hot environments can lead to heat stroke. Mixing MDMA with certain psychiatric medications can be potentially dangerous. And then even if it's not MDMA and we know what it is, you can still provide education around that substance, right? You can tell them these are the risks of whatever this substance is. And it really allows you to educate them in a way that's really, it's really effective because you're not coming across as that like dare model, just say no, don't do drugs. You're actually being honest with them about what the risks are, and honest education always works better than dishonest education.
Right. So, can you give a little insight into how often people are bringing in things that they aren't what they think it is?
So it tends to really vary over time and depending on location. I actually have a fairly decent body of evidence now that backs up the sort of anecdotal idea that burners get better drugs. That's actually borne out by the evidence of testing at regionals. We've had time periods and geographical areas where it was substantially more than 75% of the samples were not what they were supposed to be. There have been time periods
Wow.
when most of what people thought was ecstasy was something other than MDMA. There is a new group out of Europe. They go by various names. They're primarily dark web vendors. They produce these unusually shaped, incredibly dense pressed pills. They have sort of a glossy coating to them. The Teslas were some of their first like major pills they released a few years ago. And they've really changed the dynamic. These pills are almost always MDMA. They're very high potency. They tend to be over 200 milligrams. They're scored on the back. You're actually supposed to break them in half. They're meant to be broken in half. And sometimes that messaging doesn't travel with the pills. And so that's actually causing separate issues when people are getting pills that are 250 milligrams of MDMA and they're used to taking pills that are 70. So maybe they start with two and they're used to starting with two and then maybe taking a third when they start to feel it. You know, if you do that with a pill that's 250 milligrams, you're approaching dosages that are potentially physiologically problematic, not just you're having a difficult night. But if you've eaten 750 milligrams of MDMA within 45 minutes, you might have a very difficult night physiologically. Like there might be physical problems that occur because of that. And so that's changed. It's changed the dynamic. And not only did they start releasing these pills, they actually published their recipe for manufacturing MDMA using a new precursor that does not rely on safrole oil from Cambodia. It's a precursor called PMK glycidate. It's widely available in industrial settings. It's used for a lot of things. And so by publishing this recipe, they've really changed the amount of real MDMA that we're seeing. But that's MDMA markets. The ketamine markets recently have completely gone to hell. There was major ketamine busts in China a few years ago. Whole villages that all these villages did was manufacture ketamine. Lots of these were shut down. So we've started to see things like deschloroketamine being sold as ketamine, 3-methoxy-PCP. You know, PCP is another dissociative, so dissociative research chemicals. Experientially might feel quite close to ketamine. But the dosages are very, very different. So if you get sold one and you think it's the other, you can have really difficult experiences that you weren't necessarily planning on having. And we've also, over the last few years, started to see the rise of research chemicals that can be laid on blotter. So historically, there were very few drugs that you could fit an active dose on one piece of blotter. You know, maybe a milligram, milligram and a half of powder can be put on one piece of blotter. So anything that's active at above that dose, you just can't lay on blotter. So if anyone ever tells you they have mescaline blotter, they are lying, or mistaken, one or the other. They're not being truthful either way. But now we have this whole family of drugs called the N-bomb family. 2,5-I-N-bomb is sort of the most common. And we've had somewhere between 40 and 60 deaths over the last few years of people taking recreational doses of what they thought was LSD. And these are not people tripping so hard that they run into traffic or jump off of buildings. These are physiological drug deaths. These are generally the thing that ends up on the coroner report is multiple systemic organ failure, which is a fancy way of saying everything went to shit real quickly, right? Your whole body just started to like go haywire. And it's being sold as acid. I mean, all over the country, we're seeing this drug being sold as LSD. And yeah, it's a real problem. And so the reagent testing is a really useful tool for filtering out these misrepresented substances.
It's come up a few times in comments, and so I just want to make sure that we the there's a, some representatives from the Black Rock Rangers that are listening along and
Yay!
making sure that people know that one when in if you are in a bad place, they are there to help us. And specifically, there are people trained to get us to I think Zendo, and is that the place where people that need or actually maybe I should ask you if people are not if there's not a dance safe booth to ask questions and there's not a ranger, where should people take somebody?
Yeah, so I'm not
We
100%
don't want them
sure.
coming to Pink Heart.
Right. You don't want them coming to Pink Heart. Yeah, so Zendo is an incredible service. They're on the map now. They used to be much harder to find, but they're actually on the map of Burning Man now that you get when you come through the gate. You should not lose your mapper event guide. There's lots of useful information in there. But certainly rangers are probably easier to find than Zendo, right? I mean, if you whistle loudly, you can generally find a ranger on Playa. And yeah, I mean, it's important for especially first-time burners to know that rangers are not they're not law enforcement. You're not gonna get in trouble. They'll swing you by Zendo. The Zendo volunteers are incredible people. They're compassionate, caring, professional sitters for people who are having difficult experiences. And yeah, I, you know, historically, DanceSafe used to pick up a lot of that Slack at events when people were having difficult experiences. We were often the ones they ended up coming to talk to. And I'm so thankful that Zendo exists now, that there's groups out there that are specifically for people who are already having difficult experiences. DanSafe is really, ideally, we're pre-consumption education, right? We really want to
Right.
catch people before they've taken anything and educate them about potential risks and potential rewards. I mean, it's good for people to know that there's a reason people take these substances, right? There's not, it's not just risks, it's always a risk reward analysis. But yeah, I'm not saying that you should. What was it?
I personally would never admit to going to Zendo for legal reasons, but theoretically, a good friend of mine went to Zendo recently and had such a beautiful experience and was so impressed with the degree of care and love and shame-free kind of guidance that that this friend of mine received. It's nice to know that should one go, make a mistake in dosages, for example, that there is a help. That being said, we're in the harm reduction conversation. We want to try to avoid people to get there in the first place.
Sure. And also, even if, yeah, even if there's no substance use, I mean, even people, the playa is such a physically, emotionally, and mentally challenging place, that I think people often end up in Zendo completely sober, right? I mean, it's just marriages start and fail at Burning Man, relationships start and fail at Burning Man. It's just
Right.
a, it's a pressure cooker for the human experience in so many ways. That, yeah, I think it's incredibly useful that there are places you can go, even regardless of substance use, that issue being aside. But also, it's not illegal to be a substance user, Halcyon. I think that's an important distinction, right? It's just illegal to get caught with the substances. It's okay to like talk about psychedelic use. It's okay to be open as a psychedelic user. I'm quite out of the fractal closet. I think that, you know, I've been on Fox News talking about my own psychedelic use. I don't shy away from that conversation. Just don't, you know, if you're going to be out as a substance user, just don't keep any illegal substances in your home. That's the balance that needs to be taken. But I think yeah, it's important that we be open
The
about our the sources of our inspiration and the sources of our life-changing beneficial experiences, because I really do agree with, I don't agree with Terence McKenna on a lot of things. In fact, I actually disagree with much of what Terence McKenna said throughout his life. But the idea that dying without ever having experienced a psychedelic is quite a lot like dying a virgin, that resonates really deeply with me. It's an important part of the human experience to have these experiences and to feel these things. And yeah, I think that it's okay to talk about that. I do. Personally, I'm not suggesting anyone
Too. And
else.
I think that we have the Michael Pollan's new book out and these very
Sure.
mainstream sources and people talking about it. And so I think we're on this place where we now have a lot of people who are not rebels and underground dwellers that
Right.
are exploring. So it's maybe even more important to be having these conversations about how to dabble into what is really a black market and do so safely.
Right. And really, if you look at the grand scheme of the human existence on this planet, you know, call it 250,000 years of modern, anatomically modern Homo sapiens sapiens having existed on this planet, this idea that you wouldn't alter your consciousness with psychotropic plants is that's the abnormal thing, right? That the norm throughout human experience has been that these plant medicines were integrated within our society. They were a part of our culture. You know, often by looking at contemporary psychedelic using cultures, traditional psychedelic using cultures, these were initiatory experiences. You weren't really considered an adult until you had gone through this experience and had this happen to you. Like, you weren't a full member of the community until you had faced this part of yourself that these plants can unlock. But yeah, living under prohibition changes that dynamic. And yeah, just knowing that, you know, just because somebody says something is X, Y, or Z does not mean it's X, Y, or Z. Really, trusting your guy is a very poor substitute for chemically analyzing something and seeing with your own eyes what it is you
Oh, dude, it's
have.
so pure, dude. It's
Yeah, you
so
got to try.
pure.
It's
It came
family,
straight
right?
from
Family.
Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it in Amsterdam. It came straight here. It's so pure, 100%.
Yeah. You know, I always tell people it's not really about trusting your guy. It's about trusting your guy's guy, who I promise is not a guy you would ever hang out with. Right? Like, the dudes at the
Right.
top of that chain, I don't care what substance it is, you would not be hanging out with those guys. And so yeah, just knowing that these test kits exist. Oh, we set up a 10% discount code on the DanceSafe website. It's Halcyon. So we set it up for this podcast. So if anyone wants to go, it'll work for a week. So you got a week to order.
And that's a home kit.
It's a home kit. You
That's a
can test 50 to 60 times with the home kit. What you're testing changes what kit you need to order, but that's laid out pretty easily on the website. You can take a look at the reagent chart and figure out which reagents you need for which substances you're interested in. And yeah, that's
I my close friend purchased a kit from DanceSafe a while back and got into his possession a pretty large supply of a great deal on a big a huge amount of MDMA that was not that, definitely was not that. And so I'm very grateful for that kit. It is who knows what untold damage to my body it has saved my
Right.
friend's body it has saved us from. Well, because he may have given it to me, so that's why it saved me.
Could have given it to a
Yeah.
lot of people, right? I mean,
Right, exactly.
that's the concern is that these things tend to move through friendship networks where people implicitly trust the person that they're getting it from because they're friends.
Totally.
And so
Right.
yeah, it's important to remember that like I'm not telling you not to trust your friends. What I'm telling you is that if you don't know for sure that they reagent tested it, you don't know anything about that substance. And if you don't do it yourself, you really don't know. You really don't know what it is. And I love, I go to tons of festivals a year with DanceSafe, and I go to regional burns, and I'm thankfully not quite at the point yet where like I get generally recognized. I mean, I know you're at that point because I've been standing next to you when it's happened. So thankfully I'm not at that point. But I've had people just sort of randomly ask if I needed test kits, like, hey, like neighbors in the campground, and that's great. Like these kits work for, you get a lot of tests out of an individual kit. And so, yeah, having a kit isn't just about you. It's about your community and your friends and your neighborhood. And so, yeah, I think that's an important tool to have in the harm reduction, toolbox.
It's
Unfortunately, we
also
don't.
like I say it's actually a fun way to I've been at parties where that's the way you start the party is just like hey let's have play a little science experiment and make sure
Yeah,
that
playing
we're all
Alchemist is a
cool.
lot of fun. I mean, it is. It's a lot of fun to play Alchemist. Andrew, by the way, I saw your comment that just popped up. 100% down to do that if you have connections there. Shoot me an email, mitchell@dansafe.org. Anyone can email me. I get emailed all the time, and so yeah, I'd love to come do a love to come do a testing kit demonstration. We don't unfortunately test on Playa at Burning Man officially. We do not have an official Dance Safe presence at Burning Man. That's something I'm very much looking forward to, very much looking forward to addressing going into the future. It's something I've done a lot of politicking on in the past. We have some ostensible concerns about the use of the name, but there's also the ACLU of Nevada camp, so I feel like nonprofits that are providing services to the burn, I don't have any issue with them using their name, regardless of if it's my nonprofit or not. But that's, I get a lot of pushback within the burner community about the idea of decommodification and how we might be bending that a little bit by being there with our name. But we need the name for the trust it brings. We need people to know that it's safe to bring their substances there. And yeah, I do. I think it's fun to make this a community activity. This is not something we should hide. This is not something we should do in the shadows. God knows people are comfortable enough to, take baggies out of their pockets and keys to do bumps, which, by the way, you shouldn't do that either because you can spread hep C by sharing a key. You should have your own snorting implement. You should not share snorting implements. But if you're in a crowd where you're comfortable doing that, you should also be comfortable pulling out a test kit and using it. I think that's a fair balance.
Awesome. So that's I let's go migrate to things like that, like sharing keys and like dangerous behaviors either for your health or for with law enforcement that people might not know is a bad idea on the playa or at
Yeah.
festivals.
Yeah, so let's separate those into two. Let's separate those into drug dangers and Leo dangers. They're closely interlinked, but
Okay.
I think they're worth addressing separately. Let's start with Leo dangers because that's one I really enjoy talking about.
Leo meaning.
Law enforcement officers, LEO. That's actually their acronym. That's the acronym they use. I think they like the lion imagery. I think that's how they view themselves very much, is this like line of defense in the sand. So I think the really important thing to do is to actually do the research. You should know what your rights are. You should watch some YouTube videos of people asserting their rights in a respectful, non-confrontational way. There's whole training videos out there, including many that were done by former law enforcement officers. They've done sort of how to deal with police training, or they've done training videos online of like how to deal with police. I'm trying so hard not to read the comments as they pull up on my screen. My eyes always want to read words as they appear. I'm doing my best not to do that so
I think you can
I can
flip
stay
it to the
focused.
right and it might disappear.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
If you like scroll
Oh,
right, they'll go.
there you go. Perfect. All right, thank you, John. Yeah, so watching these videos, learning how to deal with law enforcement, because it's a practiced skill. When I was an undergrad at New College, I actually had an exercise with a group of friends where we would practice on each other like skits, right? So one person would like be the cop and the other person would practice asserting their rights. Because the police are allowed to lie to you. It is legal for the police to lie to you. They'll tell you things like, yes, you have to give me a physical ID. When even if you're being arrested, all you have to do is provide them with your name, date of birth, and in some states, your address. So they can't make you go back to your camp. Even if you're being arrested at Burning Man, and they can tell you perfectly legally, if you don't give us a physical ID, we're going to charge you with obstruction. Well, first of all, they can charge you with anything they want. That doesn't mean anything when it comes to like what happens in a courtroom. And all you're required to do is identify yourself. You're not required in this country. Anywhere in this country, you are not required to physically carry an ID. Sometimes you're required to identify yourself, but that just means name, date of birth, and address. Knowing that you can tell them, no, I don't want you searching me. And if I'm not being detained, I don't consent to a search. Like, and asking over and over again, if there's only two takeaways that I can give you in this video and you're not going to do any additional research, the only things you should ever say to law enforcement are, am I being detained? Because as soon they can talk to you anytime they want. They don't need any probable cause, they don't need any reason to talk to you. But that's a consensual encounter, and that changes when they're detaining you. And detaining doesn't necessarily mean you're in handcuffs. It just might mean you're being detained. You can't leave. And if you're not being detained, leave. Like, if you feel like an interaction with law enforcement is getting at all to a point that you don't like where it's going, ask them if you're being detained. And if the answer is no, walk away. Don't continue the conversation. You're not required to talk to law enforcement at all. And if the answer is yes, if you are being detained, the only thing you should say at that point is, I'm invoking my right to remain silent until I can speak to an attorney. And that's it. That's all you tell them from that point on is, I want to talk to an attorney. I want to talk to an
And
attorney.
you're so right that this is something that you should practice and you should like rehearse. And if you, some people even like print it out and laminate it and put it, on
Sure.
your cup, because like it's I friends that have been, public defenders and such, and they're like, almost every case is a problem because the person incriminates themselves, because the
Right.
person does not know their rights, and they get led it down, and they do what the cop tells them to do. They say, "Can I search your car?" And they go, "Sure," even knowing they've got stuff in their car. You're like,
Right.
it's because you get freaked out, and you want to please the police officer, and you think if you please them, then they'll be
And
your
they have
friend, and that
guns.
is not.
Like they're carrying a gun, right? Like the instinct is to do whatever they want so
Yes.
that that gun doesn't. But yeah, it's important to know. Also, the festival lawyer, Cameron Bowman, has an incredible blog about law issues within festival culture. I highly recommend checking out his blog. He has those cards. I believe you can either download them or he has them. They're somewhere on the website. They have the, here's my, I'm asserting my rights, right? I'm invoking my right to remain silent. I'm invoking my right to an attorney. I'm not saying another word until my lawyer is here. And really, if you just know those two tricks, like n I don't even want to say tricks, those two fundamental rights that we have in this culture,
Right.
these are constitutionally enshrined rights for a reason. It's not like they didn't add a constitutional right to chocolate ice cream. These things are there because they're important. And the reason they're important is that when you give men authority, I say men very specifically because it's any human being, but boy, does our gender seem to have more of an issue with this. But when you give people authority over others, the natural tendency is to abuse that authority. It sucks that that's a part of human culture. It sucks that that's what seems to be really hardwired into our psychology, but it is. It's there. And so knowing that their authority only extends to the point that the law allows it. They don't get to make things up. They don't get to search you without probable cause or without a reason to search you, unless you waive those rights, which most people do, because they just don't know that they can tell the cops, no, like I'm not letting you go through my pockets because you feel like it, right? That's not how the law works. And yeah, as long as you know those two things, that find out if you're being detained, ask them, make them say it, and they'll try to move sideways on that conversation. Oh, I'm just talking to you. Like, you don't want to talk? You don't want to talk? Like, no. Like, am I being detained? I need a yes or a no answer. And in fact, if you don't say yes, I'm assuming it's no. Because the default state of the human condition is freedom. The default state of an American citizen is that you can always walk away. You can tell these cops to fuck off. You can flip them off. Those are constitutionally protected activities. I'm not recommending you flip off the police. It's just a bad idea. But what I am saying
Yeah,
is that it's not
that does
legal
not
for them to
qualify as harm
detain you.
reduction.
That's not harm reduction. But what I'm saying is it's perfectly legal to engage in that behavior. And so knowing that, knowing you can say, am I being detained, and walk away. And I spend a lot of time at Burning Man talking to law enforcement. I try to gift them stickers every year. I try to ask them how their week is going. I want them to have positive interactions with burners. I want them, when they think back on Burning Man, to think in a positive way. Now, if a person has, something in their pocket that they don't want law enforcement to find, maybe not walking up in an inebriated state to try to gift them stickers, right? I mean, don't go looking for trouble. But if you're sober and
Right.
clear-headed and you don't have anything on you that you wouldn't care if they found, talk to the law enforcement. We want them to have good memories of Burning Man every year. We don't want every memory in their head to be dealing with sexual assaults and arresting people for drug possession and fighting. And those things are thankfully less common at Burning Man than almost any other event in the world. But they're there. They're part of the community, and the law enforcement often has to deal with those things. And so, like, we don't want that to be their normal memory. But if they approach
Right.
you, there's no obligation to communicate with law enforcement at all. If they see you hand your friend chapstick and they become convinced that that chapstick was an illegal drug, don't waive your right to be searched because all you have is a bowl and some weed in your backpack. Because just because they didn't find what they're looking for doesn't mean they're not going to find something. And so that's also an important thing to remember. Now on
What?
harm reduction, not dealing. Oh, sorry.
Before we go into that, I just want to say that Ranger Vegas is letting us know that Rangers have feedback forms for law enforcement interactions. So if you have a questionable or a bad cop moment, fill one out, please, and try to get their badge numbers, names, and vehicle numbers if you can.
And if you see somebody else having a difficult time with law enforcement, recording the police is legal. If you have your camera or your phone on you, which I see more and more every year, I see people doing the selfie thing at Burning Man, and I have no problem with it. But if you happen to have your phone on you, recording from a respectful distance, don't run up in the police's area and try to, be annoying about it. But simply recording interactions, when they know there's a video camera running, that's often enough for them to behave the way that they should behave all the time. And law enforcement at Burning Man is seems to be generally more positive than law enforcement at other events. I mean, I hear horror stories at festivals all the time that I very, very, very rarely hear about Burning Man. But by all means, yeah, those ranger forms for the Leal team is, I mean, that's an amazing service that the org provides for people to be able to give feedback that goes directly back into the chain of command so that they find out if there's problems at Burning Man. Because there's a lot of cops at Burning Man, and one bad apple can
Yeah.
really change the dynamic.
Along the lines of there's a lot of cops at Burning Man, that's something that I sometimes have to make sure that people understand, people that there is a massive presence of law enforcement, and some that you see and some that you don't see, and some that are going to try to entrap to be undercover. I definitely know many people that have been partying with cute young things, and then after hours, as they get requests for drugs from this person, turns out this person is law enforcement. So I hate that that is a reality, that the gifting culture is affected by that. But I think it is something to remember that you need to be very protective of anything that you do that may be seen as illegal. if you all you do is smoke pot, you better not do it anywhere that that could be seen from very far away, or anything could be smelled by anything anymore.
Very
You don't want
far
to walk
away.
around. Very far, exactly. You don't want to walk around with paraphernalia, walk a tent to tent with a glass object that could be a pipe. I mean, like, you do not want to invite somebody who is looking for you making a mistake.
Yeah, and that's it's an unfortunate reality of the current system of government that we have, and prohibition is a way of attempting to address substance use. One of the things I often tell people who are going to Burning Man for their first time is that no matter how much you feel like you're on the surface of the moon, you're in rural Nevada, right? Like, don't
Right.
ever forget that you're in rural. You're not just in America. You're in like one of those places that you wouldn't want to get pulled over, right? Like, you do not want to get pulled over in rural Nevada. And that's the reality. And like, yeah, that part of it sucks. I mean, I love the Playa with all my heart. I mean, that place is very near and dear to my heart. But like, we're in a county in Nevada that very recently has had law enforcement making public racially charged statements, making public statements about being a young earth creationist. I mean, it's that part of America. And if you forget that for just 1 minute, your whole life can change in a very, very, very drastic way. If you forget that, like, this isn't the moon, and like, yeah, I've been hanging out with this girl for 3 hours, or guy, I mean both, right? But I've been hanging out with this person for 3 hours. That does not mean you know that person. It certainly doesn't mean you know that person well enough to share drugs with them. It super extra means you don't know that person well enough to go back to your tent to get the drugs, to do the drugs with this person, right? Where all of your drugs might be. Like, it just doesn't mean that just because you know this person, or even knowing them from a previous burn. I actually know one person who went to jail in Nevada sharing drugs with somebody that they had met at the previous Burning Man, which is super unfortunate, but it happened, and it was not a small amount of drugs they ended up recovering from this person's tent. And yeah, they served time in Nevada for a drug charge that resulted from sharing drugs with somebody they had known from a previous Burning Man who was law enforcement.
Yeah, I wish I didn't have a number of stories of people that made momentary mistakes at the burn and had significant consequences to them. And
I
it's
mean, I
especially
really feel
in.
like if you talk to anyone who's been going to Burning Man for any length of time, right? These are not uncommon stories if you happen to know a few dozen burners. Like, everyone who's been going for, 08 was my first year, so we haven't gone every year, but this will be my 11th year burniversary. And right, like, you hear these stories literally every year, and not like in a general sense, like in a I know this person who knows this person, right? Or I know this person. I mean, I have multiple friends who I personally know who've had significant legal consequences because of very, very, very minor mistakes they made, things that were easily avoidable. Don't pull baggies out just because you're in a crowd, right? Like, just because you feel like nobody can see you in this crowd, and you want to maybe get a little bit higher than you are, and you don't feel like walking to a porta potty or going back to your tent. And it's like, no, the cops are hanging out in the crowd too. They're just not in uniform in the crowd.
And I think that's a significant thing to keep in mind, because, and you mentioned, it feels like you're on the moon, and that can, it sucks that you have to keep that awareness, because there's so many things about the burn where you get out of the default world thoughts. You get out of the default world and impinging on your patterns, and you're free, and you're open, and you're wide open, you're connecting with people, and you're loving, and you're naked, and you just want to give and share and be. But that's a place you got to keep your shit together and keep it private, because the consequences are too great. Everything else, let it go, but that you got to hold on to it.
I think it's such a violation of the spirit of our culture that they do these undercover stings out there. I really do. It's a thing that really bothers me on a deep personal level. And I'll be perfectly honest, I don't really use substances at Burning Man. It's such a otherworldly place for me anyways. That I often find substances either don't really add as much as I was looking for them to add, or in some ways actually actively subtract from my experience of the Playa. And so this isn't really a personal beef for me. I don't really get high out there. I certainly would never share drugs out there. But man, I'll tell you, like, the fact that they do that just hurts my heart in such a way that I have a hard time expressing it. It just takes everything that our culture is supposed to be and flips it on its head to do these sorts of undercover stings out there, you know? And so, yeah, I don't know. It's not something we can really fix until we fix the broader political culture. You
Right.
know, somebody once asked me when I would feel like I had really like contributed to the world. Like, what's my line in the sand where I feel like I've made a difference? And for me, it's ending drug prohibition. Not to have too high of goals or anything, but when at a bare minimum, when personal possession of all drugs is no longer treated as a criminal offense, I'll be comfortable retiring at that point. Like, then I can step back and focus on, I don't know, traveling maybe.
Drug
I don't even
use.
know, because that's where I focus is I really do believe that at its core, this is a matter of civil rights. This is a matter of
Well,
we either own our brains, we either own our bodies, or we don't. And there's no middle ground for me there. You're either free or you're a slave. And as long as the right to pursue happiness doesn't include the right to modulate your neurochemistry, those words don't mean anything. Happiness is serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine in your brain. That's just what happiness means. And if you don't have the right to modulate those chemicals directly, then what does the right to pursue happiness mean? Like, what does that mean if you don't have the right to directly impact your happiness?
I just gotta say that when you do end the drug war and we have a party to celebrate, that party is gonna be off
Awesome
the
party. Awesome party. Yeah, that's gonna be a good one. Yeah.
So let's talk a little
Oh,
bit
so now
about
other
other.
dangers.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of tips that people should know. I'm gonna try to really distill it down to my big ones. I think if I give all my drug tips, we're gonna be here for like a long time, right?
Yeah.
I think the core one is knowing what you're taking. I really do think that's like sort of step number one. Because if you don't actually chemically analyze your substances and know what they are, then all of the other steps don't really work. Because all of them can go totally sideways because you took substance A when you thought you were taking substance B. Right? If you do all of your calculations about how much you're going to drink before dinner based on it being a PBR, and it turns out to be 200 proof cleaning alcohol, then like your decision-making process was meaningless. And so that's really the sort of first thing is knowing what you're putting in your body. I also think really doing the research before you just like stumble onto these drugs is super important. I've heard a lot of horror stories that started with, I was already really high on substance A and somebody offered me substance B. You know, choosing to combine substances, poly drug use is not something I would talk down about. I think that's an important part of learning how to engage with these substances is learning about poly drug use because they really can work in synergistic ways where you get more out of A plus B than A plus B. And I think that's good to know and important to know and behavior that I have no problem with people engaging in. But if you don't do that research beforehand, if you don't know before you're going to mix these drugs how they're going to mix, or you don't even know how drug A might interact with medications you take, or now that the activated charcoal thing is so big, like if you take a bunch of activated charcoal and it absorbs all of your normal psychiatric medications, and then you take a bunch of substances that you've researched, like you should know these things that mixing and knowing what you're taking and research is important. And you should take the time to do that research. You should learn about what you're going to be consuming. You should learn about combinations that you're thinking about doing. It's a little difficult at Burning Man because you don't have your phone, right? I mean, we require that
Right.
access to the universal body of knowledge now to such a degree that like I can't get home if I don't have my GPS out. Like, where am I going? You know?
There's a
But
great
doing the research.
I can't remember where I saw it, but it's like a spreadsheet of which drugs interact badly and worse with others. Is that a DanceSafe
Yeah,
thing, or is that?
it was done by a UK group. If you look for drug interaction chart, you'll find it. I love the chart. The two caveats to that chart is that it's pure sourced information, right? It was done as a Wikipedia style collaborative thing. Not always the ideal way to develop information. I also really dislike that they used green for no known interaction. To me, green just culturally reads as an endorsement, right? Go. That's what green means to so many people. And I don't endorse individual drugs or combination of drugs. Like, yes, MDMA and LSD is a very common combination. It's a very synergistic combination. It's one that people really tend to enjoy. I'm still not encouraging anyone to use any substances. And so having anything labeled green, it just like makes me twitch a little bit. I'm like, no, I don't want to have anything that looks green on any chart. Like, I'm just not comfortable with that. But the chart is a very useful body of knowledge that you can carry in your pocket. Again, assuming that you reagent tested everything. Because if you're mixing MDMA and LSD, that means one thing. If you're mixing 2,5-INBOM that was sold as LSD and N-ethylpentalone that was sold as MDMA, that's a very different conversation that you're having about like potential physiological risks. But yeah, it's a good chart. I'm going to recolor code it at some point and then we'll start using it just as soon as light blue, maybe, I think would be a good balancing point, yeah, that's my
Well,
only
see,
two criticisms.
it's a good starting point, and it kind of gives you an
100%.
insight on which types of drugs you need to be really careful about. Like, if you're
Sure,
messing with,
and you're
like, I would say that there's certain drugs that, like, there's a lot of red, you know, on down the line.
right.
You're like, oh, maybe GHB is something I need to be really careful with, that kind of thing.
Alcohol.
Alcohol,
I mean, there's a lot
exactly.
of red on the alcohol line, right? I mean, there's a lot of things
Right.
that you don't ever want to mix with alcohol. And people, especially at Burning Man, people don't even think of alcohol as a drug, right? I mean, they're just like sort of default drunk, like quite a lot of the time. And
Right.
so, like, and not to poke too many stereotypes, but like, that one's kind of true about, people start real early with their drinking culture out there.
People tell me all the time, like, I've been sober for, you know, since I got here. I mean, I've been drunk and high, but
I've been drunk and high the whole time, but I've been sober since I got here, right.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, and also on Irrawid, which is an incredible resource for all drug users, but you can actually search trip reports by combinations of substances. So if you're trying things that are a little more exotic and maybe they're not on these like sort of standard charts or there's not a lot of things that you can find about Googling, how is this 2CB going to interact with ketamine and GHB, right? Not that you should ever don't mix ketamine and GHB. That's actually a that's one of the red ones, but
Yeah.
how is this 2CB going to interact with MDMA and GHB? Hop on Irrawid and you can plug those in and you can see trip reports of people who've done that exact combination. And so that's a really, really useful tool if you think to use it before you go to Burning Man, right? I mean, that's the sort of
Right.
the limiting factor to this. Although 4G internet is pretty widely available at Burning Man now. So, not
Right.
saying you should be on Facebook every day, but having the ability to access these tools is not the worst thing in the world. I'm not, I quite
All
like that
right,
internet's available.
I'll give you that. That is one good use of the internet at
Aha, I
Burning
found a
Man,
use that Halcyon agrees with
is
for
to
4G
research
internet.
drug interactions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a one valid use for the 4G internet that so many people have in their camp now. So yeah, knowing what you're taking, knowing the combinations, not sharing snorting implements is a really important one. Your nose is a bodily orifice with a mucous membrane, and you have to treat it like one. So I often tell people if you wouldn't have unprotected sex with a person, you should not be sharing a key with them. I think that's a good line, right? I'm not saying if you're married in a monogamous relationship and like you're sharing a snorting implement, like, okay, whatever. I'm not saying that you should never do it. But realistically, that's the line. If you wouldn't have unprotected sex with this person, you shouldn't share a snorting implement with them. I'll often say this at festivals when I see a circle of people passing around a baggie in the campground, and there's always one person in the circle that everybody looks at when I make that statement. It's like that one person that none of them would have unprotected sex with. They're just like, oh God, like I just, but yeah, it's a real transmission vector for hepatitis C for sure. That's a known vector for hep C. It's a little less clear about HIV if it could spread that way, but certainly if you've been doing lots of snortable drugs and you're bleeding, even a small amount, tiny, tiny little droplets of blood, if it comes out of one person's nose and goes up yours, like you've now put potentially HIV infected blood onto a mucous membrane. These are things you
Wow.
probably shouldn't do. And so,
Right.
yeah, that's an important one that often gets overlooked. I mean, people really overlook that one a lot. And then when it comes to just sort of general cultural things, Having a friend who knows what you're going to be consuming, who's going to hang out with you, especially if you're thinking about like maybe pushing some boundaries. If you're somebody who takes MDMA a few times a year and you've been doing it for 20 years of your life, I'm definitely not saying you need somebody to like hang out with you all night when you're taking a your sort of the dose of MDMA that you're used to taking. If you're trying new substances, if you're trying new combinations, if you're trying substances in an environment where you've never tried them before, if it's your first time at Burning Man, you roll in on Monday, you set up your camp, and you decide to eat a couple hits of acid and go out and explore the playa for the first time, maybe having somebody who's there to keep an eye on you is not the worst idea in the world. There's vehicles driving around at sometimes inappropriate speeds, especially early in the week when there's still things being constructed and people are using their cars as cars and they've been out there for 5 weeks with nobody on the playa and now suddenly there's 10,000 people have shown up. Like having somebody there to keep an eye on you is not the worst thing in the world. Maybe somebody there to tap you on the shoulder and be like, yes, I know that you can climb this. I'm not saying that it's physically impossible for you to climb this thing. I'm just saying maybe we should come back a little bit later when you've had a little time to metabolize some of the drugs you've consumed, and then you can make the
Right.
decision about whether or not you should climb this. What was the one that the giant pig, rotated this way, rotated this way, like maybe
Right.
be sober when you decide to climb the giant pig or the spinning blocks of granite or the exploding Dance Dance Revolution games. I mean, there's a lot of stuff at Burning Man that could kill you if you're not careful. And I like that. I like that about Burning Man. If all of the edges were bubble wrapped, we might as well all go to Disney. Like, I like that it's a potentially dangerous place, but knowing that you might be interacting with potentially dangerous things is important. Also, being sure to adequately hydrate. I mean, that's important advice for anyone, right? I mean, anyone at Burning Man, that's important advice. I don't care if you're literally a nun. Like, if you're literally as sober as a nun, it's important that you drink enough water, that you replenish your electrolytes. Got to eat some salt every once in a while because you're sweating all of your salt out, and if you throw those levels out of whack, things get very, very, very dangerous very quickly. And also the one that I'm gonna be fully transparent. This is the one I have the hardest time with at festivals in general, and Burning Man in particular, is proper sleep and nutrition is actually an important part of this conversation. Doing substances on a well-rested, well-fed body. You got to take care of the robot. The iRobot theme is so wonderful. I really am very excited about this theme. Because I really do feel like our bodies are sort of the interface, right? They're the avatar with the world. They're the way we interact with the world. And if you don't take care of your robot is not going to do well when you feed it lots of drugs. If you've been sleeping 2 hours a night for 5 nights and you haven't been eating and you haven't been drinking enough water, that one little line of cocaine might be the thing that ends you up in medical. Whereas under a normal sort of well hydrated, well rested, well fed circumstance, you'd be totally okay. And there you're
Right.
even the people who experience that tend to think of those as like drug problems, like I had a drug interaction, but it's really environmental, which is true for a lot of cases with so-called drug incidents. Almost every so-called MDMA overdose death that we know about has been somebody who took a sort of well within the bell curve dose of MDMA in a hot environment or didn't drink enough water. That's not an MDMA overdose. Overdose means you took too many of drug X, Y, or Z. These are people who are almost universally having problems because they took MDMA when it was too hot, or they took a different drug thinking it was MDMA. And the media calls both of those MDMA overdoses, which drives me up a wall when they do that. If somebody takes 200 milligrams of n-ethylpentalone that they thought was MDMA and they have a problem, that's not an MDMA overdose, right? That's just not what those words, the words have meaning. And also, if you stayed awake for 5 days and you ended up in Zendo because you cracked, that also doesn't necessarily mean it was the drugs. Like, get some sleep. Like, you should probably get some sleep. And so that one I will admit I have a personal hard time with. In terms of like the general drug education stuff, that I think that pretty much if you follow all that advice. If you follow the advice about law enforcement, you're pretty unlikely to have a problem. Unfortunately, because we're not set up officially as DanceSafe at Burning Man, if you want to test your drugs, you got to order a test kit pretty much like you should be that's one of the things you should be ordering now so that it's there in time. But you would be shocked how many of your neighbors have a test kit at Burning Man. If you end up on the playa and you end up with a substance being given to you and you weren't planning on taking that substance, but it got gifted to you by somebody and you're interested, ask around. There are lots of them there. We're not the only people who do test kits. Some of the other people who do test kits are also at Burning Man in a much sort of, we always try to officially have some sort of okay to be there. There are other organizations out there that are just renegade test kit folks, and they come to Burning Man too. There are test kits available. They're around. If you ask your neighbors, somebody will know. A lot of time, DanceSafe volunteers who are at Burning Man on their own time will put up little flyers on porta potties. For DanceSafe services, come talk to me at this camp. I see that every year, and I often have no idea who it is, right? Like, I'm literally the executive director of DanceSafe, and I'll see that flyer, and I'll be like, I don't know anyone in that camp. Like, I have no idea who put this flyer up on the porta potty saying that they're doing this. But, like, man, thank God they're doing it because it's such an important service. And until we can sort of negotiate our ability to be there, which I'm really going to be pushing for 2019 being the year that we have a DanceSafe booth on the playa. A dome, not a booth. Our normal 10x10 would be smashed into it would be smashed into a little art project of piles of metal and vinyl. But we'll have a DanceSafe dome. We have a DanceSafe dome, so we'll bring it. But until we can officially negotiate that with rangers, with medical, with law enforcement, with the org, we're not a renegade testing organization. We try to do things in a way that everybody knows what's happening, where they're officially. And so, but yeah, ask your neighbors if you need a test kit and it's getting late in the week and you don't have one. But if you think there's even a chance you're gonna be doing things like this, whether it's at Burning Man or at home with your wife or at other festivals, the test kits in a freezer or a fridge will last 7 or 8 months, maybe a year in the freezer. You gotta let them thaw out when you take them out of the freezer. I just keep mine in the fridge. I don't keep mine in the freezer, but a lot of people have said that that's extended the test kit shelf life. I haven't actually done the testing on that yet. I have to test my test kits. It's a whole meta test thing.
So we're approaching an hour in here, so I wanted to touch on a couple other things. I think we've hit drugs pretty good. We've also got
Sure.
sex and rock and roll, and just the things that
Sure.
I wanted to share on those things harm reduction wise is it to follow what we said earlier about like you're so free and so expressive and everything is perfect in the flow and plot play and magic, but you do have to recognize that there are situations where you have to make sure you're taking care of yourself. And one of those is volume of audio. I don't rarely ever go to concerts, but I think because of Burning Man, going to stages in the middle of the night and stuff, I do have a ringing in my ears, and
Sure.
that's a very legitimate thing that's going to happen when you have these people doing large sound art that are pushing the boundaries of audio experiences. If you are wandering in and out of camps and onto dance floors, that is a legitimate risk. So I know you guys give out earplugs, right?
Yeah, earplugs and condoms. And that is something we do at Burning Man. So if you swing by the Zendo setup, we're not going to have a dance safe table or anything, but they will have condoms and earplugs that I brought. I also try to generally swing bags of 500 earplugs through sound camps at night. Like, I'll just walk around. It looks like a bag of Cheetos. I've had people toss them in their mouth. It's fine, but they're earplugs. If you see me with a big bag of orange things, they are not carrots. They are not Cheetos. Don't put them in your mouth. I'm giving out earplugs. And I try to swing them by like Berlin and Tokyo as well, like the ranger stations. I always try to drop off some earplugs and condoms for them as well. But yeah, the Zendo setup this year, this is the first time we're doing this. But if you swing by
Oh, cool.
Zendo, we're gonna have a little table out with bins of earplugs and condoms that I'm gonna make sure stays refilled throughout the entire week.
And those should just be in your travel pack at all times. You never know
Right,
when you're going
carry
to be
them
out and about and
everywhere.
need. It's so small. I should also add that, just in case there's any confusion, the condoms will work, but the earplugs stop a lot more decibels when you put them in your ears. The condoms
Oh
work better when you roll onto the penis. Yeah, but
yeah.
just
Wrapping your ears with the condoms is not the ideal way to do it. Probably better than nothing, maybe. I don't know.
In a
We'll have to get a
pinch,
decibel meter. We'll have to do some experimentation at the burn this year.
and along the same lines as that, having the condoms on you, get be comfortable. Start using, hey, let's have an STD talk as a way of flirting. Make sure you practice up on your consent conversations. That's a whole other conversation that we could go into deeply another time. But just take care of your genitals, take care of your nose, take care of your hydration and your organs and your liver and your spirit.
Yeah, so really quickly before we hop off, I did want to say I am doing a talk on affirmative consent with Bureau of Erotic Discourse and Presley Peach, who runs Consensual Circus. It's a consent education and drug education circus here in Denver. So that is Monday at Burning Man at 4 o'clock at Bureau of Erotic Discourse. Then Tuesday at 2:30, I'm doing a talk on harm reduction for kids, for teenagers at Kidsville with kids and their parents. Then 6:30 at night on Tuesday at Palenque Norte, which is at Camp Soft Landing, I'm doing a panel on 5-MeO-DMT called 5-ME Oh My God. Then Wednesday, harm reduction principles and practices. We're doing that at Entheos Rising at 1 p.m. And that's going to be with Sarah from Zendo, is going to be joining me for that. So if you're interested in learning more about Zendo, and also Megan, who runs a group called Harmonia, sort of an East Coast harm reduction service that does sitting for people. Then 4:30 on Wednesday, I'll be at your camp. It looks like we finalized that. I'm going to be doing a talk on microdosing at your camp at 4:30. Right. So Pink Heart, swing by. I'll be doing a talk on microdosing safety. Then 7 o'clock that night, I'm doing a radio interview on KPPR, which is the Playa. They hide radios in the porta potties. So we're doing an hour-long harm reduction interview on 103.3 is the station on that one. And then sometime on Friday, I'm doing a talk with Rick Doblin from MAPS and Christopher Breedlove from Burners Without Borders. We haven't settled a time yet, but it's going to be Friday, called Principles Beyond the Playa, Running a Nonprofit Like a Burner. I'll post all that schedule on the Dance Safe Facebook page. So anyone who wants to like find a printout, I also make like posters, like event posters for my talks at Burning Man, and I post them up everywhere. So I make it very hard to miss me. If you want to see me, you have no excuses. I'm looking forward to seeing you out in the dust. I'm so glad that we decided to do this talk.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you too. As you said earlier, you're open to requests and you can direct people to things that they need. I am going to be trying to be as reckless as possible now that I know there's so many resources out there. And I look forward to seeing everyone at the Burn. I'll be at Pink Heart, is at 4 o'clock in Esplanade this year. The Pink Ride is Thursday at noon. I will be sober for both of those things. Any other time, I cannot promise anything, so don't get mad if I can't remember or focus on
best coconut time. Ice cream on the Playa.
Yes, we will see you there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for ice cream. Much love. Thank you, Mitchell. Everybody be safe. Sort of safe.